The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Preparing the Ruins, the 2015 Annual Conference Recordings, copyright 2015. If you have purchased this recording, you may make additional copies for use by your school. You may not sell copies of the recording, nor post it on the internet. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at www.accsedu.org.
Okay, so I don't see anybody else coming in. Just a disclaimer at the very beginning. I realize I named this creating an award-winning music program, but by music I meant choir. So if you never plan to do choir and you can't stand it, then you should stay to see why it's so great. Anyway, my name is Sally Mailer. I teach at Veracruz School in Newark, Oregon. Our school started 18 years ago. I was the art teacher the first year. Taught them everything I knew about art. They needed a, which wasn't much, they needed a music teacher the next year, and that's actually my training. So 17 years at Veritas. We started out K through 6, and we added a grade of year. So now we graduated our first senior in 2003. She just turned 30. So that's the background there. I have a bachelor's degree in flute performance, oddly enough. And then I went on to get my degree in elementary education. So how I ended up being a 6th through 12th grade choir director, we'll get there. But for now, could I get you to follow me? Ready? Here we go. You don't expect grown-ups to be able to do such a thing. Good job. That is, I don't know what you call that. It's some sort of a cannon, but you started out, I call it a body percussion cannon. You can do anything you want, this sort of thing. You can make funny sounds. You're sneaking in a warm-up. Did you hear that? I'm going from high to low, from low to high, all those different things, and getting you to really watch me. The next step would be, I'd say, you guys follow me for beats after, you follow them for beats after, and I've seen kids do that. It's not brain surgery, oddly enough, but there you go. To start, I have an outline back there. It's the same outline that's in your book as well, but I'm going to elaborate, obviously, a little bit. I start out by just talking about singing. Singing is the basis of a good music program. I'm going to say some things like that you may not agree with, but I don't have time to explain and defend every statement I make. So I have my email on there if you want to say, why do you say that? Or who is this Zoltan Kodai fellow? Or not that you don't know, but at any rate, please email me and we can go from there. So this singing program, general program, can lead really naturally to a good choral program, band program, instrumental program. People are really making their instrumentalists sing a lot now. It trains the ear. It trains the mind. I grew up playing instruments. I loved to sing, but I never wasn't trained with it until later. So you're playing instruments, and it's like, okay, this is your B, this is your B flat, this is your D. It's illogical. We're playing out of tune because we haven't trained our ear. And it takes a long time to train your lips and your fingers and all that stuff to play in tune, etc. So there's my little plug for how this relates to instrumentalists. But anyway, in my school, it's K through 12, as I said, and we require everyone to take music, K through 12, twice a week. We also have elective choirs. And they all meet before school, so we have nowhere to shove them into our packed schedule. Even the seniors have full days and basically no electives. Good classes, though. So before school, we have an elementary choir that's 3rd through 5th, a middle school that's 6th through 8th, and a high school concert choir that's 9th through 12th, obviously. And they meet from 2 to 3 days a week in the mornings. My colleague teaches the younger kids. If you're adding up and finding more than 5 days, that's because I'm really 2 people. She stayed in Oregon. But, so Kodai-inspired teaching is an incredible match for classical education. Kodai was an educator and composer who was born in 1882, and he lived a long time, until 1967. He did an amazing amount of work in the field of education and music. So, and he believed that teaching children was incredibly important. Somebody asked him, when do you start the education of a child? Don't you get asked that? You know, and he said 9 months before the child's birth. So, I like that. So, and he also felt that folk music was a really important piece here. Every culture has its own musical mother tongue, and that's the body of folk music. So I believe that folk tunes were like some sort of a little perfect piece, almost like a proverb. It can't be written. It just comes into existence of centuries of knowledge. So normally with you go into the culture and you say, well, what are your folk tunes that your kids sing on the playground? Because I think our parents probably did do that. I did some of that. We had little jump rope rhymes and things. You don't really see that anymore. So what we have to do is teach them the songs first. So and then we do it in a methodical way. So we figure out which things are easiest for the ear. At the beginning, you've got only so and me, for example. There's a whole bunch of tunes that only have 2 notes. You know, there's one about snail that's really great. It's catchy. And then you add the upper so, and then you get a song like Rain, Rain, Go Away. Rain, rain, go away, come again some other day. See, hit a higher note. 3 notes. And then if there's a game or an activity that goes with the song, that sticks so much more with the children. They get into it. And once you get the song into their whole being, then you can teach and extract some elements. And you go, okay, now this note is so, this one, and you get them to discover these elements in a very sly way. Very methodical the way people have figured out these lessons. And it's really great, and you should look it up. If you haven't done Kodai levels training, I highly suggest that you do, especially if you teach elementary music. They're taught all across the country. You can Google Kodai levels training and come up with something. I did my training through Portland State in Oregon. Susan Brumfield heads up that program. She's actually a professor at Texas Tech. And she and her posse of Kodai teachers go around to 5 different universities every summer. She ends up in Portland because after, you know, starting out in Texas and being humid all summer, she loves coming to Portland where it's probably raining in August. So anyway, so I highly suggest that. So I just wanted to do a few practical things, as you can see. One of them is in Kodai training, they have these, we use solfa signs. The word solfa is in English, solfege is French, solfeggio, Italian, all the same thing. So this is the sign for do. So if I can just pick a random do, like, do, can you sing with me and try it? Do, re, mi, fa, sa, la, si, da, si, la, sa, fa, mi, re, do. Awesome. Raise your hand if you've ever used the hand signs. Oh, well, preaching to the choir, obviously, literally. Anyway, and how about the solfege without the hand signs? Anybody? Okay, 2 of you. All right, so let's just try a major 1 chord, for example. So if I can get some people to sing do, some people me, some people so, do, mi, so, do. Nice. How about a 4 chord? See that? Do, fa, do. One of those. Nice. So we're going to go from the 4 chord that we just did back to the 1. So you're going to go, do. This works well. Dojo, where are you going to go? Tommy, you're going to go? Whatever. See if you can do this. I'm playing it so well.
Just because you seem like you're really good at it.
The fourth, here we go.
Amen.
Yes, good job. In four parts. Nice. Obviously, when you're teaching a group of music teachers, you can go through something like this that might take you 10 weeks for the kids. You don't just go up to your kids and go, okay, the four chord, and, you know, et cetera. By the way, who teaches choir in here? Awesome. Who teaches band or orchestra? Who teaches more than one of those three? Okay, yeah. We wear a lot of hats. Nice. Okay, so let's see. I'm going to go into teacher training. So, yeah, I mentioned, go ahead and get that Kodai training. I highly, highly recommend it. And one thing that I found very helpful as an elementary music teacher back when I was doing the younger grades is that we've figured out monthly plans and yearly plans that made so much sense. So, for example, in April of fourth grade, you learn fa or whatever. You know, you have some elements of rhythm and melody and so on in each month, and it all cycles around and accumulates. In K through 5, we suggest that you do a lot of games. I mentioned that already, but I was going to do some pictures. Look at this. So that's my concert choir. This is the treble choir, and my son's one of the messy hair in the very back. And this is a game that we were playing on the beach, and it's called Chicken in the Fence Post. Anybody know that one? Okay. So on your papers that I gave you, it's on there somewhere. It's on the back of the first page. So I wrote it in the, we call that a master copy sort of thing. So you can do that in any key. And So you can do it with rhythmic syllables as well. I'm just going to rush through this. So if I were to say, everybody do the rhythms, the 16th notes are tippy-tippies, is what I call them. You can call them whatever you want. Eighth notes are tee-tees, the quarter notes ta. Raise your hand if you do something like that. Yeah, those sorts of things are super useful for teaching. So I could have the kids just go like tippy-tippy, tee-tee, and they'd rattle it off. They're very good at that. And if I looked at the solfege I've written down in lowercase letters. If it's for do, I'd be like, do, 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 mi, re, mi, so. Right? You've done these things. Okay. So the song, anybody want to try it? It's super fun. Okay. Because I just feel like, you know, a lot of times you go to teacher conferences and we sit and we listen and we need to learn by doing, I think. So I guess we might as well do it that low. Ready? Try it. Chicken in the fence post, can't catch your seat. Chicken in the fence post, can't catch your seat. Chicken in the fence post, can't catch your seat. Hello, goose and brownie-o. I would never do it that low with a group of children. Sorry about that. So the game. As you can maybe see from my picture, there's concentric circles. And I love games that will work with older kids. These are middle schoolers. They're way too cool to play most of the games. But I save a few of them. I will not allow Marge, my co-teacher, do not teach chicken in the fence post. Because if she teaches it to them when they're in third grade, they can do it. But they're done with it by the time they're in sixth grade. So I'm like, oh, okay, these are the ones that are off limits. So this is one of them. Concentric circles. You get a rubber chicken. They're hilarious. I was going to bring mine just to make you laugh, but I forgot. So anyway, you put the chicken in the middle. You can see its legs sticking out. You see them? So anyway, the circles are going two different ways. And you have two people. Let's say George is over here and Harry's over here. And you make them not look while you choose two different gates. So let's say I say to these guys, this is a gate. And I say to these girls, this is a gate. So we sing the song while we're going opposite directions. George and Harry, whoever they are, can look again. We're doing the opposite directions. And we sing, and as soon as we get to the end, hello, Susan Brownie. Then, they put up the gate. You have to run. Wherever the gate went to, I'm going to go under this gate. And they put your hands up. Run around, go under that gate. So depending on where you are, you're going to go through two different gates, and then you're going to get to the chicken. That doesn't make any sense. Email and I'll spread it right now. But games like that, they're really, really great for music ed, believe it or not. So, let me go see what I've got on my next picture. Oh, yeah, that reminds me that I would like to show you a few videos. My high school choir has been going to the state choir competition for the last, I don't know, 8 years or something. And four of those times we won first place in our division. We're a small school. I think this is the right song. So I wanted to emphasize going from folk music to high music. This is by John Dowland, Renaissance composer. Come again, please. So you're allowed to mess with it. So the first verse we sang it all, soprano, alto, tenor, bass. The next one, I just started taking parts out and adding the back end. And then the last verse, we even go more slowly and just the men sing. So because it's so sad, like it's like a country song, you know. Come again, sweet love. I'm just gonna die, you know. And I always try to give a disclaimer to the kids. Look, get over it. Go on. There's more fish in the sea. You know, you can talk about life when you're singing words, right? And this isn't a strictly Christian song, obviously, but I believe that God blesses all of our endeavors, and you know, music is His gift, and it's all Christian. So, choral-based secondary classes. Again, everybody sings. So you think to yourself, maybe remembering back in ninth grade, and there was that one kid who really belonged in woodshop, and he was in choir instead or something, you know. He's angry about it because woodshop was shut, so he couldn't get in. I have a couple of those once in a while. But, you know, they're polite kids, so they're decent. But in general, we're commanded in Scripture to sing. That's why with our small school, we decided we can't do that. A whole bunch of things well. There's only 212 kids, K through 12, so this is what we're going to do. Also, choir does not require a lot of, equipment. Almost like swimming instead of playing hockey or something, you know. Anyway, and it's what we do at our school, so it becomes normal. The kids, they just sing. I ask them to do that weird exercise at the beginning. They do that. I'll just start going, that's only two. Yeah, see, and most of you are like, yeah, no problem. The others are like, I don't think so. So, you know, they just get into like that. And the boys, you know, they're silly. They get into it more than anybody else. Whereas you can have the whole culture of a school where boys in particular will not sing because they think it's not cool. So somehow, I don't know. Maybe since we started from the beginning, it's just kind of something we do at our school. And if you worry about tone-deaf people or tone-challenged people, email me. I can tell you all sorts of things to do with those people. I've never met a tone-deaf person yet, by the way. It's funny. Like if you have a room full of people and you have them singing some little thing like the Rain, Rain, Go Away, for example, and one person just sounds totally off, if you have him or her sing all by herself, oftentimes you'll find that the intervals are actually correct. They're just singing a tritone lower than everybody else, which, as you know, is the best interval ever. So anyway, music geek jokes. So but anyway, like I say, we can get into that at some point. Oh, that reminds me. I was thinking it would be fun to get together, and I guess they have breakout sessions. I've never heard of that before, but it sounds like fun where people can just sit and talk about music and ask each other the questions that we're curious about. So
Anybody want to do that, like, after the last session today? When is the last session over? 5:30? So give us a break and maybe meet right out on the couches or somewhere. 5:45? You make it, what are you saying? So it doesn't work. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Tell me. We'll talk about it. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Why not? Later, like at 9 o'clock. 8 o'clock? 9 o'clock. 8:30 in the bar. Anybody in? Anybody there all by myself? Just kidding. Okay. Anyway, so for choral-based classes, I think it's really important to have a variety of styles and cultures. Oh, yeah, I forgot to go back to my other thing. This is I bet you can't tell, but this is the first time I've ever used a PowerPoint. Totally not obvious, right? No, that's the thing. See? That's the thing I don't want, and that's the thing I do want, except it's not the right one. Oh, I know where it is. Here we are. Okay. So anyway, here's the kids singing an African song. You can't hear them, but you can see them. You'll notice they were not standing still. So in order to really give respect to and some sort of authenticity to the styles that you're singing, because we can never be totally authentic. I mean, do you see any oh, yeah, there's an African kid. This child, this Bernie Bongo, he was wonderful to have for the year, but unfortunately he went back to stay with his family again. I don't know. But anyway, he helped us a little bit with the moves, as well as one of the girls. They all have really long hair nowadays. One of the long-haired girls, she has traveled to Africa with her father, who's a singer for Louis Palau, a missionary. So anyway, so they've gone, and she's observed the choirs, video of them. And one thing we noticed is a lot of people just go back and forth, which is great. If you haven't done that, try it. But there's other things you can do. So right here, I can't even remember what it was. It had some, like, bump, bump. You know, like this bump. And then we tried it on the risers. It wasn't quite as good. But still, it looks cool, right? Anyway, we've done some really interesting things at state. I mean, come from the smallest group. Our state competition lasts 3 days. There's 70-something choirs, from the hugest ones down to little ones like ours. And I'm pretty much the edgiest one there. So I don't know how classical that is. But, one year we did this one super great song called Bon Fe Abba. I don't know if you've ever tried that one. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that it's really pretty easy. It's easy as heck, but it sounds complicated. Love that. But, we put these movements to it. You should look us up on YouTube, Bon Fe Abba. But anyway, we have this, gorilla move. It's like this. Anyway, that is terrible when I hear these things. But the whole group going down like that, and then they go back and wiggle and whatever. It was good. And at first, you think my kids will never do that. But if you believe that you want them to do it, I have to decide. If I'm kind of wishy-washy, I don't really care, and they don't want to do it, okay, great. But if I really want it to happen, they can tell and we can make it happen. And they have fun with it. And that's one of their favorite songs. So, by the way, you have a couple of handouts. The green one, if you feel like taking that, that's just the program from a benefit concert that we put on for ourselves. We have a benefit for ourselves. And so that just lists some of our favorite songs. That's all. I just had so many extra copies. I thought, well, maybe they'll like that. I don't know. Now, languages, don't be afraid to tackle them. Latin, definitely tackle that. When you're in a classical Christian school, for crying out loud, probably have a Latin teacher. But the thing is, your Latin teacher wants to pronounce it in a classical way, and we want to pronounce it, you got it, ecclesiastical. You got it. There's only a couple differences. And your kids will always be like, it's Pacam. And you're like, I know that you learned that in your class, and that's lovely, but we're going to actually pronounce it this way. Don't make the Latin teacher sound like a jerk or anything. It's just, it's a different way to pronounce it. So there's phonetic guides, internet recordings. You can bring somebody in. I have one mom that speaks Ukrainian and Russian, and she came in and taught us two different songs. So things like that. Okay, so anybody know Ubi Latte Deo? I find it in the beginning. So I thought that'd be super fun to sing. So that one, Ubi Latte Deo, Alleluia, is in Latin. And it sounds like, ooh, they're singing in Latin. There's three words. So Raise your hand if you know what I mean. Lady in the front who's going out to dinner. Yeah, yeah. Rejoice in God, praise the Lord, right? So, anyway. So straight here, you're going to go. So let's do it in unison. There you go. And then, you know, if anything goes a little awry, always make light of it. That's a good way. Praise the kids. They're doing great. Good job. That's a great song. I've taught that every year of my life at the school. Let's see. Oh, okay. So, style, like I say, I really enjoy ethnic music. And I think it's important. It shows that we're learning about, you know, there's not just the one place that God blessed, America. There's all sorts of cultures in this world, and they are products of, well, I don't know what they're products of. And I'm trying to wax eloquent, and I'm off my script this bad. At any rate, the next song I want to show you is a Syrian song. I sung in a lot of languages, but not yet Arabic. So we're in Arabic, and it's a love song. So there's Earth Songs is a really nice publisher, and they have all sorts of ethnic music. But they have this music of the Muslim world thing where it's nothing that's political, nothing that's religious. So we're talking love songs and, you know, folk songs or whatever. So we have this song. I have a dancer on this one. Again, I have to be the craziest one at state. And so one of the gals in our group is a ballet dancer, and she was in the Nutcracker presentation. And there's a part of the Nutcracker that's called the Arabian dance. I think it's a dream sequence or something. So she just told me, you know, I think my Arabian dance might work with that. So I was skeptical at first, but she did it, and it was beautiful. So that's what's up with the dancer here. By the way, she has a shirt that goes from here up to here underneath her outfit. She didn't when she was at the ballet, and everybody was watching it and not minding it's Christmas, so hopefully they don't mind. Thank you. Did you hear the difference in tone quality? So as soon as it starts like, right, we're just trying to sing right, you know, they're in the front of your face. So those are fun things to explore, what different sounds need to be made in order to make something sound somewhat authentic. Ha, there we go. There we go. But see, here they are looking pretty. So let's see, where am I? There we go. So when they come to me in sixth grade, and I think 6th through 12th, which seems a little odd because secondary starts in 7th, but it works for us. They already can read basic melodies and rhythms. For example, that Chicken in the Fence posting, they could read that very easily. My goal is for the graduates to read four-part music on site, even the ones that aren't in choir. So these characters here, there were 42 in the concert choir this year, and about 65 in our whole high school. So I call it my select choir, because if I do have somebody come to me and they can't match pitch, I encourage them to try again later, to work with me, whatever. I don't just tell them, you know, forget it, but I do say not right now. But it's not the most select group in the entire universe. But you can imagine what happens when I take them on a trip. Or we go on a field trip somewhere. So you have four kids in the 9th grade and 2 kids in the 10th grade left. You know, teachers just love me. The other teachers. That's why I try to be so charming. Just adds up. I'm off script. Okay. So teacher training. This is really, really, really important. And I mentioned Kodai, and that's great, especially for elementary teachers. But there is so much out there for the older, for the teachers of older children as well. Don't spurn the secular music education. They have it together. I mean, there's some terrible programs, you know, where they're just doing pop music and, you know, whatever. But there's some amazing programs. If they are Kodai-based, those people probably have it together. And the directors I know in all sorts of choirs, I mean, in all sorts of places from elementary up through college are spectacular. And there are some, what do you call them, retired people that are now doing judging, and they'll come out and help you with the choir or whatever. That's a great idea to match up with some of those people. In fact, a lot of choir directors are Christians because they, you know, a choir started in the church. And in fact, in most public schools, they can still sing Christian music. You got that public school up there, and they're singing, sing to the power of the Lord, come down, and they're singing it like the Christians, because that's what they're trained to do. But anyway, I think that must go in their head and their heart somehow, but that's sort of not very important. Anyway, for my topic, I mean, going to conferences, there's so many conferences you can go to. All-state conference events, ACDA events, that's the American Choir Directors Association. All sorts of things. I have a little bit more at the end about that. Now, in our choir, in our school, we have some select choirs. Oh, aren't I cute? So, I guess I'll leave that up there. It's adorable. Like I said, these adorable choirs. They are this year about 2/3 of our school population in each of the choirs. How do we get and keep the members, especially boys? Don't you know that, you know, most choirs have, I've seen choirs with one or two boys. Those are brave boys. My choir's actually, well, the high school one, I had 22 boys and 19 girls this year. That's typical. They like to sing. So I asked my students, why are you in choir? And I took a little poll and I scientifically compiled the results. And these are my top three answers. One, I love either singing or music. That's good. Number two, my friends do it. I like the community, or everyone does it. So I guess that's good if I can get to the point where, oh, everybody else is in it. And then number three, trips. I go on some really good trips. And fun. That was another thing I was listed. So, you know, here we go on. I hired a photographer, a friend of mine, paid him $100 to take these awesome pictures. But anyway, took these pictures, like the first one on a bridge at George Fox University, and then he just said, put his camera on a tripod and said, run towards me, make a crazy face. So, the second one here actually made into a poster, a tour poster. We went to San Francisco this year for 5 days. That's about 550 miles from Portland. But see, isn't this the best poster you've ever seen? And then, you know, there they go. Yeah, they're nuts. But anyway, there you go. That's the fun. Now, how you choose appropriate how do I choose appropriate repertoire? I'm not going to tell you what to do. But really important, your range of your singers. Your singers are not professionals. They're, you know, diamonds in the rough, especially the boys. I give so much attention to boys, but seriously, their voices are doing something crazy each day sometimes. So I've heard that something about the American Boy Choir. They're saying that the director or whoever works with the repertoire will actually rewrite parts as they go on tour, even just to accommodate them. So be really, really cognizant of what their range is. Find music for them. FAB is the worst music ever, really, for that sort of a range. Because, you know, you've got soprano and alto, they're great, but the bass part is really a tenor part that has some notes that are too low for any tenor to sing. Occasionally those are nice, but there's ways to tweak your repertoire, and I have plenty of those, and I can, like I say, email me, I'll give you some. But you can write music for them, too. And if that's a big, like, oh my gosh, you can't do that. I just mean, you know, arrange it a little bit. One year I had this one kid, darling child, who he could only sing about, I think there were three notes. Anyway, so low G, low A, and low B right there. So, you know, I'm just having him go, blah, 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 blah. You know, bring a torch, Jeanette Isabella. You can do it with three notes. Level of difficulty needs to suit your group. So for sometimes I'll listen to some, you know, Eric Whitaker piece or something, and I'm just like, oh, I want to do that. And I'm like, nope, because it's too complex for us. But here's something that fits us really well, my group, and I'll play a bit of it at least. You'll notice I have this amazing drummer. It really makes me angry. I'm going to go to the next slide. yeah, that's a fun song. But there's all, can you tell, there's only four parts, but they're just so rhythmically different. It starts out with a typical 6-8, da-da-da-da-da, jig sort of a thing, and then the altos come in with duples, like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and that's really hard for them. This one, one of the girls in the front, she's always directing them. I'm like, keep it back down. I mean, I like them to be free to move, but, you know, that was a little distracting, so I finally told her. But, yeah, we're, again, known for being free in our movement. You used to stand like this, you know, but that's something in choral dressing or choral world that's just becoming more of a thing. I realize we move freely. There's even a director in Japan, it's an international school, St. Mary's International School, Randy Stetson, who has developed this whole way of having his kids move freely. It's a boys' school, and he has them stand maybe 4 feet, I mean, even farther apart, like twice as far apart as my kids, and he lets them move however they want. Have to, I think, stay sort of below a certain plane, but they're not moving to the beat necessarily. They're thinking, I'm doing this with my tone, I'm doing this. It's beautiful. He's got some YouTubes that you might consider looking up. Randy Stenson. Anyway, so speaking of repertoire, though, we're trying to balance some things here. Like balancing, looking at the thingy that I'm supposed to look at. There we are. So for the choosing repertoire, I make a mix of secular and sacred, a mix of fast and slow, mix of English or other languages. That last one, this is them clapping at the end of that one. I have a clapping pattern, but it's not in any particular language. They're vocables, like diety, 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 blabber. Anyway, you don't want to, I've done it before where every single song we do is in a different language. Last year our state set was 2 Latin songs, a Polish, Ukrainian, and in our local newspaper said, and 1 Indian. I'm like, that's a language? You know? Anyway, it was in Tamil, but whatever. So, do you have a local newspaper like that? Likes to misquote and say funny things and make you seem silly? Like, yeah, she said it was an Indian. Anyway, so another song I wanted to show you. This is, if you think about all the things I'm asking you to balance, this would be completely opposite from the first one I just played, the Afro-Celtic. So this one I wrote. You're just in it. I can say it. If you think about those two songs, they are diametrically opposed, and I think could go well in a concert together because of that. So 1 secular, 1 sacred, 1 fast, 1 slow, 1's in some other language, 1's in English. See, that was my goal, to have a song in English for the kids. Style-wise, I'd say the other one was folk, you know, has Celtic and African elements. This one is a chant, actually, so it's almost medieval, but yet the harmonies are very modern. Like, they're just tone clusters quite often. So eras, first one traditional, this one brand new, you know. So that's one thing about, you know, just getting a balance in there. Let's see, my picture there. Yes. So, and another question I have for picking repertoire, really big one, is will the boys sing it? Girls are not quite as picky. But boys, you know, if it's perceived as sounding feminine or fluffy, I don't like songs like that anyway, so it's perfect. But in fact, I have this friend as a choir director. We sit at the state competition listening to the bigger choirs and make comments. He's like, I love this one. I'm like, ugh. You know, and then I go, look at this one. He's like, ugh. So I'm looking at the rhythmic ones, and he's, you know, look at the trees and the birds, and, you know. Anyway, this is singing Balalaka, which is this amazing Indian song arranged by, well, it was written by the Bollywood composer, A.R. Raman. He's written songs for maybe 200 Bollywood films. Anyway, the professor at Portland State University, Ethan Sperry, arranged it. And we tried it. That was one of the things that was really too difficult for us, but we did it anyway. One thing is it had four drummers. We're like, we're in. So I got three drummers and a tambourine player, and then two of the kids are playing shakers. But in the middle, there's a crazy drum solo. And what Portland State did, because we heard them do it, is they would just go crazy dancing in the middle. So we out-crazied them. But there's an exuberance to this, to the performance, and they put their whole selves into it. And it's just a poem about nostalgia for the boy thinking about his childhood, playing games and doing this and that. The boys totally sang that one. I got a comment from a girl this year, don't give all the cool parts to the boys. So I have to be careful. I think all of us do. I talked to my ballerina gal. She was saying that in the ballet world, the men are treated like princes because they're so rare. Like, oh my gosh, they'll dance. So occasionally, the teacher will force them to try dancing on points just to get some respect for the ballerinas. Well, I don't want to be like, you know, oh my gosh, you're a prince, you're a boy, and you're actually singing. So I have to remember to pay attention to the girls because they need help too. For the past several years, whenever I go to a clinic, I hear, your men sound is amazing. Your girls sound like 13-year-olds. So we're getting there. We're getting a more mature sound, but I just wasn't even paying attention to them for a while because the boys need so much. Now, another thing I do, like I said, is trips. Trips are great. I've done five-day trips. We went to Eastern Oregon. If you know anything about Oregon, here's the state. Here's where everybody lives, in Portland. There's a few people that live down here. They don't matter very much, but mainly it's up here. And then halfway through, well, a little less than halfway over is Bend, and they think that's Eastern Oregon, but it's not. But it's drier than where we are. Now, on the other side of the Cascades is this desert. I think it's like between 7 and 10 inches a year of rain. And it's high desert. It's very, this is very wooded for Eastern Oregon, this picture. But, you know, sagebrush, cowboys, ranches. Some ranches have 500,000 acres. So I actually taught out in Eastern Oregon in a one-room school for a couple of years. So I have contacts with some friends whose children are now in their 30s. But anyway, so we went and sang at some rural schools and so on. So this is that trip. Then the next year we went to Portland, which is only 20 miles or 25 from our house. But you know how you never really, sometimes you don't really delve into a city that's right next to you. So we stayed in a hostel. We sang in cathedrals and schools and whatever. This is Eastern Oregon on this alkaline flat. And then this year we went to, Seattle. My Seattle picture is not here. Awesome picture of Seattle. Imagine it in your head. Okay. And then this year, we went to San Francisco area. This is the Memorial Chapel at Stanford University. So one of the things I make sure to do in these trips is to get a hold of a university professor, unless we're going out to Eastern Oregon because there aren't any, but not in the area we go. We're down here in the southeastern part. Remember Oregon? Anyway, can you do this with your state? No, like Florida, and no. Anyway, so Stanford University. I just looked up is the email. I thought, you know, Stanford's near San Francisco. It's not really that close to San Francisco, by the way. But anyway, the director wanted to work with us. He's the director of, or he's, what do you call it, the music department head. He was amazing. And we got to sing in the chapel, which is, chapel, it's huge and beautiful. 5 second echo. This is one of my pictures from singing in Eastern Oregon. So we did this is a concert at a rural school. Only about 10 kids in the school, but, you know, they just come to anything. It's like, you're having something? Okay, I'll come. This is great. So, and aren't they cute with their cowboy hats? Of course, you probably don't think that's cute if you're from Texas. You're just like, man, that's normal. But anyway, here's the inside of that chapel at Stanford. Here's us working with the famous Ethan Sperry that I told you about, who arranges wonderful songs from India sometimes. Portland State, working with us. I know what it was. We were working with this other Indian song that he wrote, and you're supposed to do overtone singing. It's like, so we got him singing like this forward. He's just like, sing it like it's coming out of your fingertips. Anyway, we'll go back to Ethan. There we go. All right. What time do I have? My goodness. Well, all right. Now I have to just abandon my script apparently. But trips, retreats are also really important. They have all the same issues as trips, like trying to, I do them super cheaply. Like we went to, between $200 and $300. I can do a 5-day trip. It's true that we're sleeping on gym floors. It's true that we're taking a bus, not planes, or, anything fancy. And a lot of times you get people to feed you. You call around and it's like that one with the cowboy hats. They made us a huge potluck. That was lovely. One church we went to in Southern Oregon had, they fed us breakfast and lunch, and they did an offering, and they were amazing. Anyway, so retreats are fun. They're not concert-oriented. They're more build the community and, what else are they for? For rehearsal, you can get about 2 months of rehearsal into 2 days. Just make them rehearse a lot. They're playing Jump Rope with Seaweed. That's gross. Now they're playing, you can also play Tug of War with it. Anyway, those are my middle schoolers. I take them on a retreat first or second week in school. My high schoolers, I just can't seem to, there are so many athletes that I haven't been able to do that. Here's my dancer girl. So, so concerts. Right, we do big concerts, like a lot of you do. We have this thing that you see, this stage is the George Fox Auditorium. We have our state competitions there. It happens to be 5 blocks from our school. And we rent this auditorium for our big concerts. So it seats 1,000 people. It's a wonderful hall. Our school meets in portables. We have a multi-purpose room, maybe about twice as big as this, that the church has. Nothing fancy, but we get to perform in this lovely hall. That's nice. Other concerts you can do, arrange to sing at a retirement home. Sing for community things. You get asked to carol or Christmas tree lighting or little things like that. Festivals. I take my kids to a couple festivals every year. This is one at the University of Portland, Catholic University. They always give you, judging sheets. If it's helpful to share those with your students, do. But this group, in junior high, how do you make them sound like some of the groups that go to this festival? I guess they're all eighth graders or something, and incredibly select. But some of them sound practically like high school groups. My goal is that they have fun and they enjoy singing and they want to go on. They're not my finished product. My finished product is the high school group. So we have lots of fun. This is the first year, I think, that we went to it. And there's a big trophy for winning, but one of the choirs that has 110 kids in it wins every year. And after we performed, the kids said, "Did we win?" It was awesome because I think we got, 12th out of 13 or something like that. They did great and they had fun and it was, and they felt good about it, okay? And like I say, by the time they're older, they, match up. I guess I'm saying don't push too much too early. Here we are out in Eastern Oregon. Isn't that beautiful? In its own way. Okay. So, fundraising. I charge an activity fee. I figure out exactly how much it costs for, as far as I can. For my trips, for my festivals, all that stuff. I throw it together. I divide it into 40 or whatever I've got. And I slap that onto their, tuition. Oh, I don't, but our bookkeeper does. Awesome. I don't have to collect it. I had to collect it the first year, and it was horrible. So there's that. We also do a community dance. I play in an Irish band, and we do a ceilidh, which is an Irish dance. And, you charge $10 a head or whatever, and 200 people that don't know what they're doing out on the dance floor. Hilarious and very lucrative.
So that's fun. Things like that are good. We, like I said, we put on a benefit concert. That's the first time we've tried that. That was nice too. Because San Francisco is a lot more expensive than other places, so I realized at the last minute I need some more dough. Let's see. So the last thing I wanted to leave you with is mentors. Find mentors. Find them. This gal, she's a retired director. I met her at like an Allstate event or something. And she comes out and will work with my choirs anytime. She happened to be the adjudicator at one of our festivals. At George Fox, they have a festival where you sing, and then you get to go into a room with an adjudicator for half an hour, and they work with you. So here she is working with them. This is Dory Jarbo. And then she made the boys face each other and sing. And I have a lot of beautiful pictures about it, but I didn't, I had like a million pictures already, so. Anyway, but mentors, I have ideas. Meet with them, invite them to work with your choir, pay them, even if it's just $50, and put that into your budget. And take private lessons with them, if you can. So I have a little fund that came from a grant that I was given that I'm using for taking private lessons from a Andover educator. And again, if you want to know what that is, email me. Also in my handout, I have a list of resources, all the ones I could think of off the top of my head that might be useful. If you want that emailed to you and then you can just click on it instead of having to type it, let me know. I also put an article in there that I thought was interesting. A young man wrote an article about how he recruits for his choirs and how he made his choirs go from 0 to 60 or whatever. I feel like I'm not giving the best, most thorough answer. So I went ahead and I asked him, and he said yes. He'd be honored if I copied that off for you. So anyway, what time are we meeting again? 8:30 in the bar, if anybody wants to meet. Does anybody have any questions? It's on the dot, 410, but yes. I don't know if I take comments. That'd be a good rock band, the Albino Alligators. Yes. Oh, yeah, thank you for asking. So here's the deal. I had two cellists this year, and they just would meet at lunch and start playing, and they arranged a pop song by Lo Fong. Anyway, just they played with two cellos. It's lovely. And then they corralled the boy that kept playing the drums, the one that graduated. Anyway, that kid, to play with them. And then I said, okay, so what do you want to call the group? I'm making the program. I'm going to call it two cellos and a drum, if you don't tell me. And they're like, oh, no, don't call it that. So they finally talked up two giraffes and Gandhi. I mean, what? So, I mean, it doesn't matter. I wrote it down. Anyway, yes. Right. Well, I see them all together with the choir. So, I mean, I see every class by itself twice a week, except for once a week I have 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, all of them all together, all 55 of them, so that they can fit with all their sections and the little 14-year-old basses can sing with the 18-year-old basses and whatever. But they're singing together, and they have their own repertoire that I work with, just the classes. And they're on the concerts, too. So I don't know. I mean, they probably don't. I don't know if they feel special or not when I go on a trip, but it's not my problem. Well, right. 3 times a week is my concert choir rehearsals before school. Twice a week, everybody has general music, which is, it's basically choir. I'm teaching them to read music as well, but I don't do a lot of music theory, music history. Well, music theory, yeah. Music history, not so much. I sneak it in a little bit. By the way, we're singing a Mozart song, blah, 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 about Mozart. Yes.
Do
Yeah, the twice a year, and then we also go to some, so maybe four times a year with the retirement homes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I wish I could be just so helpful to you right now, but I have a co-teacher. I'm not going to do that by myself, and I made sure they called her a co-teacher and paid her for it, and not just for an aid or something like that. So I have a gal who plays the piano, and I don't really play the piano. I mean, I can play one line at a time, but it's not actually necessary as a choral teacher. I mean, it's so such an advantage. You should go learn if you don't know how to play. But such a what? Special leaders are super helpful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then having a discipline plan and sticking to it no matter what. So, yes. Are they actually changing, though? Because a lot of times...
They're very unreliable in that sense that you never know what's going to happen.
Huh. I don't know. I mean, people talk about hormones in the milk and all that stuff, but I do have a friend who's in his 30s who said his voice changes when he was fourth grade. I mean, you just never know. But a lot of times I feel like boys really shouldn't be singing as low as they want to. But I make a judgment call. If I can't convince them that it's cool, then I'm like, okay, you can sing tenor. No, I don't roll my eyes. But I try to make a part for them because they don't want to sing high. Yes?
Yeah, the sports are high arts, platform, and art. And you, someone that's here in school, would pursue a career.
I have never had a great, I've never had a student take voice lessons. I mean, only a few. But I have had some great instrumentalists come through. I had a flutist who was she won third in the state competition. I've had pianists who have gone on and won concerto competitions and so on. But that's more like despite the school, I guess. We try to sing music from the classics at least, a couple per group every time. But yes, there is a strong presence for classical music in Oregon.
I know about
that
because you have
the Oregon Bach Festival. Yes, the Oregon Bach Festival is so great to go to. Mm-hmm. There's a choral conductor's part of that. Mm-hmm. Yep. And they have this amazing choir for kids. I had a child get into that once. So yes. How many what?
How many bands?
Oh, we don't have a band.
Oh.
That's the thing. We just don't have that many options. Our resources are few, so we do what we do, and we do it pretty dang well. Yeah. 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 And, I'm not
offended. Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm doing it. 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 I